Welcome, world. Welcome to season 3, episode 3 of the Act, Protect, Engage, known as Ape Academy podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Chase H. I'm a UVA, an Arizona State graduate, a U.S. Army combat veteran, and a historian of 19th century American history. So happy you could join us. Can't wait to get into another episode. Ape. So let me get y'all caught up to what we've been doing in season 3. We have been discussing slavery and the struggle over its expansion into the Western territories as one of the primary causes of the Civil War. The last two episodes we discussed the internal or domestic slave trade and the Missouri Compromise of 1820. So check those out if you want to learn more about that. Today we're going to move into the Kansas-Nebraska territory, and we're going to fast forward about a little over 30 years to 1854. All right, so this is really the stage, the big stage. This is where tensions really boil over and turn into bloody violence. Stay tuned. All right, it's gonna be a great episode. All righty, let's do some housekeeping. Please, I'm begging you, if you could do us a favor, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast, okay? You don't have to do all three, but at least do one of those, because if you subscribe or follow us, you'll get notifications. And this is important because you'll know when new episodes are streaming, all right? So you might be sitting around at night after a great dinner, you hear a bing on your phone, you look down, there's a banner on the top of your smartphone, and it'll say the APE Academy podcast, new episode streaming now. Okay, so that's how you know. Announcements, new podcasts, episodes, etc. Also, if you write a comment or review, we see that. I look at that and I look for ways that we can improve. I can improve as a host. We can improve our content, etc. All right. Doesn't have to be a thesis. It can just be one or two sentences. Okay. We appreciate your guys' support. Also, on social media is everything nowadays. We have an IG account, Ape Academy Podcast, a TikTok account, Ape Academy. Also, we are working on a YouTube visual type experience. That's going to be in development soon, all right? Before we hop in, I also have to mention the sources that we're going to use. Listen, we're not just a rinky-dink, hokey-pokey podcast that takes, you know, right-wing media or the broader media's word for it when they get their facts, all right? We're going to do some actual research. We have a few sources. First, Battle Cry of Freedom, The Civil War Era by James McPherson. He is a professor at Princeton, and he won the Pulitzer Prize for this. This is pretty much like a seminal work in Civil War history, all right? We also have history.com, we have the National Park Service, and we also have Postmarked, Bleeding Kansas, Letters from the Birthplace of the Civil War, and it was published by the Douglas County Historical Society. So this is a primary source. It's composed of letters from actual settlers in the territory. So we have a few really, really good sources for this episode. Oh, we have one more. We have a book entitled Bleeding Borders, Race, Gender, and Violence in Pre-Civil War Kansas. And this is by Kristen Ortel, okay? So we got a few great sources. We're going to hop right into it. I'm going to break it down into sections so we don't overwhelm y'all with information. Let's start. All right, so why? Why is this an important subject, okay? I already talked about kind of the lead up to this episode in the beginning, in the intro. But I'm going to reference a quote from historian Michael Fellman. He's referred to Kansas in the mid-19th century as, quote, both the central symbol and actual battleground of the fundamental American conflict between North and South. This is why we're discussing the topic of Bleeding Kansas, okay? It starts with the ratification of the Kansas-Nebraska Act in 1854. Okay, so what this act did, it repealed the Missouri Compromise of 1820. We talked about that in one of the last episodes. So the Missouri Compromise basically added Missouri as a slave state, right? It added Maine as a free state, and then it outlawed slavery above the 36 degree 30 latitude line, okay? This Kansas-Nebraska Act, right, fast forward like 34 years, okay, over three decades, this Kansas-Nebraska Act repealed the Missouri Compromise. So slavery was now going to be allowed above that latitude-longitude line. That was a huge deal. And it also added two vast new territories, Kansas and Nebraska. Through this, it introduced the concept of popular sovereignty, okay? Popular sovereignty is the concept of being able, the settlers of a territory being able to determine by voting whether they want their territory to be a free or slave state, okay? So popular sovereignty, the ability of the people to choose their leadership, to choose their policies. You can hear reflections of this in some of the Republican talking points today, right? Popular sovereignty. It was passed in 1854, as I mentioned, by Congress. And according to James McPherson, who we just talked about winning the Pulitzer Prize, quote, "This might be the most important singular event pushing the nation towards civil war." It really, the Kansas-Nebraska Act, it marked the death of the Whig Party as well. All right, so the Whig Party was the predecessor to the Republican Party. It marked the death of the Whig Party, and it really kind of encouraged the formation of the Republican Party. Okay? Out of the ashes of the Whig Party emerged Abraham Lincoln and his Republican Party, right? Standing on the backs of the old Whigs, using the opposition to slavery's expansion as a fundamental part of their political platform. Okay, so they truly believed, they centered all their political ideology around stopping slavery from expanding. Lincoln and other Republicans were terrified that slavery would become permanent, last forever, and expand across the entire country. The South had already been threatening a secession in earlier decades, and they really loved wielding that power, right, that club, in order to force through their own political agenda. So the Republicans stood up and were saying, you know what, we're not going to allow this anymore. We're going to stand up and not allow slavery to expand too far, okay? In the halls of Congress, politicians argued over which labor system, free or slave, would prevail west of Missouri. Would the territory be slave or free? In the end, when the dust settled, Congress ended up leaving the answer to this question up to the white male voters of those territories, okay? And pretty early on, it was apparent that Nebraska was going to be a free state. Okay, so everyone knew pretty much from the beginning that Nebraska was going to go free. It was up to Kansas, right? That's why there's no such thing as bleeding Nebraska. No, it was bleeding Kansas. Kansas bordered Missouri, and Missouri was a slave state. So that was the central battleground of the fight. The concept called popular sovereignty, we just talked about it, was first introduced by Democratic Senator Stephen Douglas as a way to circumvent making a strong, decisive issue or decision on the issue. So it was a kind of like a political ploy to kind of keep it out of the politicians' hands in Washington. Like, yo, this isn't our problem. We're going to lead it up to the settlers, man. We don't want to make a really hard, tough decision on this issue. We're going to leave it up to the, remember, white male voters of the territory, many of whom came across the border from Missouri. Under this doctrine, permanent settlers who moved to the territory would hold elections to install a local government. Then an elected legislature would develop a code of laws and write a state constitution. So that was the plan. Okay. Now, like Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. So this was the blueprint. This was like what, you know, all the guys smoking cigars, drinking whiskey in Washington were like, okay, yeah, that sounds like a great idea, Thomas. Yeah, it's very. So that's what they were hoping would happen. Everything would go smooth, and, you know, they would elect the legislature, and it would decide on their own. And no, that's not how this whole situation played out. Almost immediately, border ruffians crossed the Missouri River into Kansas territory, and by fraud, violence, and coercion, voted a fraudulent, illegitimate, pro-slavery territorial legislature into power. Okay? And they clashed with free state immigrants from the north. Okay? So we have to remember, it wasn't just the border ruffians, these redneck, tobacco-spitting, you know, slavery-supporting kind of hoodlums, right? It wasn't just them that were fighting. It was also some of the supporters of the free state movement were coming into the territory and also clashing with them, okay? This is a quote from the National Park Service. Quote, during Bleeding Kansas, murder, mayhem, destruction, and psychological warfare became a code of conduct in eastern Kansas and western Missouri. Murder, mayhem, destruction sounds like a good novel, but no, this is real life. Sometimes real life is stranger than fiction. And that's what I'm learning. That's why I love history so much. And one of the reasons is that I found out that this all happened, and you can't get this in any type of novel or movie. God bless y'all. We'll be coming back from the break. We're going to take a quick break, water break, coffee break, whatever you guys got to do. Join me at the conclusion of the break. Ape.
Get this beat untagged for free at freebeats.io.
All right. Oh, yeah. Quick shout out to FreeBeats.io. They provide the music for our podcast, Royalty Free Beats. Check them out. They got all type of stuff for the young folks, for the older folks like me. They got blues, hard rock beats, Juice WRLD for the younger folks, hip-hop beats, everything you could think of. So check them out. Amazing site. YouTube. Go on YouTube. FreeBeats.io. FreeBeats.io. All right, we're back from the quick, super quick break. We're going to talk about murder and mayhem. Murder and mayhem. I don't know about y'all, but I love true crime. I think my wife and I probably watch too much Forensic Files and ID Discovery, so we're kind of low-key obsessed with murder, which please don't judge me. But anyway, murder and mayhem. Okay, so the years 1854 to 1861 were a really turbulent time in the Kansas Territory, obviously, right? The Kansas-Nebraska Act of 1854 had established territorial boundaries of Kansas and Nebraska, and it opened the land for legal settlement. So this was all legal. These people could flood into the territory and legally reside there, and they had a legal right to vote, if you're a white and a male, of course. Three distinct political groups emerged in Kansas during this time: pro-slavery, free staters, and abolitionists. Now, this is a quick aside, okay? Free staters did not believe in the westward expansion of slavery. They opposed it, okay? They didn't oppose the institution of slavery itself. What they opposed was expanding slavery into the western territories. They didn't want to actually end it, okay? Abolitionists wanted to end slavery 100% done, end. And we all know what the pro-slavery folks wanted, right? Constant expansion of the institution. Violence between the parties broke out quickly and continued nonstop until 1861, when Kansas finally entered the Union as a free state on January 29th. I'm going to go over some of the most notable events during this time, during the Bleeding Kansas period, okay? during this time, during this era, we see John Brown. I don't know if you guys know John Brown. Look him up. We're going to have a podcast about him as well. He had became a feared anti-slavery warrior when in May of 1856 at Potawatomi Creek in Kansas, his sons kidnapped and killed 5 pro-slavery settlers with broadswords. John Brown was a zealot. Some might say he's a madman, a nut job, but whatever you want to call him, he hated slavery with a passion that we cannot put into words. And when he became frustrated when he saw the fraud that and the bullying that the border ruffians had kind of inflicted on the free soil and abolitionist settlers of Kansas, and he wanted to strike back. This came weeks after pro-slavery soldiers had sacked the main city, the most populated city in Kansas, Lawrence, Kansas. But we'll get back to that in a second, all right? So the shocking massacre of the 5 pro-slavery settlers went unpunished by the legal process. Federal agents did manage to arrest 2 of Brown's sons who had nothing to do with the massacre. But meanwhile, while they were looking for Brown, pro-slavery bands burned his home, chased his friends out of their homes, and just generally attacked anyone they could find that did not support slavery, right? So his massacre kind of unleashed further violence in retaliation. Only weeks earlier, on May 21st, a pro-slavery Missouri-led posse that was deputized by pro-slavery Judge Samuel LeCompte, they entered the territory to arrest members of the Free State government on charges of treason. They laid siege to Lawrence, Kansas. Okay, so real quick, there were Free Staters, right, Free Soilers, and pro-slavery people. Those were the 2 most powerful groups. Each one created their own like groups, their own government bodies. From the research I've done, and all historians will agree that there were more free soilers in Kansas, way more free soilers in Kansas than pro-slavery people. However, the pro-slavery settlers had the support of slaveholders and slavery supporters across the border in Missouri who had weapons and who were aggressive and would do anything to make sure that slavery continues to expand. So, really, the pro-slavery folks had an advantage, okay? And I'm not saying the free soilers were weak and pacifists. No. As we see with John Brown, they were cracking skulls. They were dealing violence. However, the other side was willing to do anything it took to gain power. So, as this quote-unquote deputized posse, i.e. mob, began to lay siege to Lawrence, Kansas, the Free Soil government, the Free Soil settlers of Lawrence, Kansas, decided to not resist. They decided, you know what? We're already kind of under fire, and we're under pressure from the government. They're on our backs. We're not going to resist this. If they were deputized by an actual judge, then they have legal right to be here. That was a mistake, okay? The posse of around 800 men poured into Lawrence, Kansas, destroyed businesses, government buildings, and looted personal homes. Hard on the heels of this, quote, sack of Lawrence, came shocking news from Washington, D.C. And this is going to sound crazy, but with the turbulent, polarized political environment we see today with Trump and Biden and Nikki Haley, it's not a stretch to see that this could happen. Washington, D.C., 1856. In an angry and accusatory 2-day speech delivered from May 19th to May 20th, entitled The Crime Against Kansas, Senator from Massachusetts, Mr. Charles Sumner, declared passionately but perhaps thoughtlessly that, quote, murderous robbers from Missouri, hirelings picked from the drunken spew and vomit of an uneasy civilization, had committed a, quote, a rape of a virgin territory, compelling it to the hateful embrace of slavery, end quote. So he was throwing blows, right? He was coming out hot. He was one of the most well-known, well-spoken, and influential abolitionists in the United States Senate. He was from Massachusetts. He was known to kind of rub people the wrong way, insult anyone who was his political opponent. He was very opinionated, and he was not afraid to state his opinion. And he named names. He pointed out specific Southern politicians, including South Carolina's Andrew P. Butler, who represented a, quote, Don Quixote, who had chosen a mistress to whom he has made his vows, and who, through polluted in the sight of the world, is chaste in his sight. I mean the harlot slavery, quote. So basically, to put it in like 2024 terms, he was calling Andrew Butler a sucker, a immoral, okay, someone you can't trust, someone who has bad decision making, etc. Right? He was polluted in the sight of the world. Right? His spirit, his very spirit, was tarnished by his support of slavery, and this speech sparked outrage. Right? Kind of like now, like, you know, someone says something outrageous, they get canceled. It sparks outrage. Right? People try to cancel him. That's what happened with Charles Sumner. The speech sparked outrage in the Senate, where several Democrats rebuked him, right? Oh, you cannot say this. You must sit down, sir. I don't know why they have accents, but whatever. They rebuked him. They tried to silence him. According to James McPherson, quote, the only thing that prevented some Southerner from challenging Sumner to a duel was the knowledge that the Massachusetts politician would refuse. So they were looking to slap him around. They were looking to duel him. And I also read somewhere that, you know, dueling was supposed to be done between social equals, right? So another reason why Southern politicians didn't challenge him to a duel was they didn't think he was worthy of a duel. They looked at him lower than a dog. So what did they do? They were going to treat him like one. In Southern eyes, a duel was reserved for social equals, as I just said, rather than honorable mutual combat. Sumner deserved something much less glamorous and arguably more painful, maybe a clubbing or even a horse whipping. Congressman Preston Brooks from South Carolina, he answered the South's call. Brooks was a cousin of Andrew Butler, and he walked up to Sumner right in view of everyone in the Senate chambers, and it was in front of a bunch of senators and witnesses. He approached Sumner while Sumner was writing letters. He was seated at his desk writing letters. This is what Brooks says, quote, your speech is a libel on South Carolina and Mr. Butler, who is a relative of mine. As Sumner started to rise to confront him, to look him in the eyes, the enraged Brooks bludgeoned Sumner in the head over 30 times with a gold-headed cane. With a gold-encrusted cane. I'm not gonna lie, that's kind of gangster, but whatever. After several seconds, Sumner, whose legs were trapped under his bolted-down desk, collapsed in a bloody heap, barely breathing. The incident, he ended up surviving, by the way, and he served another 18 years in government. The incident pissed off even enemies of Sumner. Joined Bleeding Kansas as a symbol of slave power and their brutality and disdain for free speech and opposition. The South declared, one newspaper, quote, cannot tolerate free speech anywhere and would stifle it in Washington with the bludgeon and the Bowie knife, as they are now trying to stifle it in Kansas by massacre, rapine, and murder. I can't pronounce that word. I apologize for that. Not a great way to end the podcast, but that is the end. That is the final quote. Quote, the South cannot tolerate free speech anywhere and will stifle it in Washington with the bludgeon and the Bowie knife. All right. So that's, if you take anything away from this podcast, know this, that the fight over slavery was not just rhetorical. It was not just on paper. It was not just in fiery, flowery, eloquent speeches. It was in on the front line, on the ground, and it hurt and killed many people. All right. That's all we got for now. Thank you for listening. Please remember what I said. Follow, rate, and review. We look at all comments for ways to improve. IG, Ape Academy Podcast. TikTok, Ape Academy. We have a new website design. It's on my profile on Instagram. And we have YouTube visuals coming soon. We are working on improving the podcast across many, many different levels. God bless y'all. I appreciate everyone who took the time to listen, even if it was only for 30 seconds or a minute. Anyone who's willing to commit themselves to knowledge, I applaud. We're trying to get better. I promise. I'm trying to get better every episode. Thank you for joining us. Once again, God bless y'all. Ape.